You're listening to The Broken Meeple Show, a podcast that speaks passionately about board games for the benefit of those who play them. My name's Luke Hector, best known for the Broken Meeple YouTube channel, and I'm an everyday gamer just like you. And I'll be talking about reviews, top 10s, and just about anything that connects me to board games. As long as I have a tea or coffee in hand, that is. So grab a cup, relax, and enjoy. And remember, it's only a game. Hey everybody, Luke Hector here, recording on the 14th of April 24, just making certain the camera is sort of near me, and the microphone has been quite loud, I've noticed, in recent recordings, so hopefully it's not too loud at the moment, but I can't seem to find the game button on here so that I can tweak it any different, but we'll just have to see. So yeah, it's mid-April, there's not a huge amount to talk about on this podcast, I must admit. Gameplay for me has been somewhat limited the past couple of weeks because A, there's not been anything new out, so I've mainly just played stuff I already know, and B, I was also at my 40th birthday earlier this month, so that took up the entire first week, and if I was playing games, they were literally just gateway games with the family, so they were not nothing particularly spectacular, just the usual stuff like Cascadia and Splendor and Ticket to Ride and Hive Mind. We got Telestrations out, which was a good laugh. They really latched onto that one quite well. So we basically just did the part and parcel for the course. But there's more stuff to come. Health-wise, pretty good. Not too bad, actually. You know, we're getting into the time where it's starting to get a little bit warmer in the UK, and this worries me because I hate the heat, and this house is basically like an oven when it gets to the hot months, so I hope we don't end up with another hottest year on record thing, because I really just will not be able to take it. But we'll just have to see how it goes. Upgraded my PC recently, new graphics card, so that's, you know, allowing me to play some more interesting games like Cyberpunk, but my CPU is currently running too hot. Which means that something is wrong in my PC in terms of the cooling. At first, two fans weren't working, so I plugged those in, they're fine. But they're still running a bit hot, so I'm not sure if I need to reapply the thermal paste and see if maybe that was just lacking last time. And if not, if that doesn't help, then I might just need to think about, you know, getting a new case, maybe getting an up-to-date cooler, because I think my all-in-one cooler solution is at least a good 4 or 5 years old. Probably longer, actually. It could even be 5 or 6 years old. 2018 sounds about right, actually. Yeah, so it could be getting on to 5, 6 years old. So maybe it is time to update it. But one way or the other, I do need to take a little bit of caution because the CPU I have runs very, very hot. It's a 12900K Intel i9. They run very hot. They're very powerful and they're awesome, but they run very hot, and it may be overclocking, you know, by the manufacturer, I don't know, but I need to investigate that, because every time I play Cyberpunk, the thing is running like a furnace, so I really do need to be a little bit wary before I play that game again, at least until I've tried a few methods of cooling it down. Hopefully my PC will not explode in the near future, because otherwise that will impact on my video editing capabilities. But in terms of the blog, I actually have not bothered to... Ooh, blimey, I need to actually present the screen, man, it's a shambles. What is going on, Luke? Absolute shambles today. But yeah, hopefully everybody's well. But the rest of my health's pretty good. I mean, I haven't had to deal with throat issues for ages because of the, you know, medication and sorting out my diet, so I think that's a thing of the past. The main thing I've got at the moment is that my wrists have been quite sore the last couple of months, and, you know, my right one's actually doing all right now, but the left one's still quite sore. I mean, I can't, you know, I mean, if I try to bend it upwards like that, it's not too bad, and side to side it doesn't seem to matter, but if I try to bend it down, that's when it starts hurting. And I've been to physios, but it seems to be taking a while to heal, and we think it's the finger flexor muscles on top that is the problem. That seems to be what is hurting a lot. It's probably a mixture of a combination of the gym stuff I do, but also repetitive strain injury from typing, because obviously I'm on the PC a lot for work and editing and playing games, so naturally I'm doing a lot with my fingers. But yeah, we'll just have to see how that goes. That's the only little bit of concern at the moment. Otherwise, I guess it's just my body whittling away as I've got to 40 years plus. So, let's have a look. Has that now started sharing? There we go. That's better. So, yeah, blog-wise, 23158, climbing nicely. So thank you everybody who supports the show and is subscribed to the channel. If you're not, then why not? Please get on there. But not a huge amount of content in the recent weeks, just because there hasn't been much out. So I did a Beyond the Base game video for the new expansion for on the underground, you know, the new New York and Paris map. Not the most popular video in the world, only 843 views, which is kind of weird because I would have thought people would have been interested in that one. But I don't know, On the Underground seems to be one of those underrated titles that isn't getting a lot of love. So by all means, check out that video and get some views on it. It's a On the Underground's a really solid game. Just cap the player count at 4, preferably 3, and you've got a really, really entertaining game. And solo, it works great as well. Done another Rate My Shelf, so I looked at a shelf devoted to a few biggish games and some older games, actually. So by all means, check that out. 2,000 views, quite happy with that for a Rate My Shelf video. And then the main one I've done recently is that I have reviewed Tainted Grail Kings of Ruin. I am halfway through the campaign now, and I thought now was a good time to give my thoughts on it, and I've given it a full review as of halfway through the campaign. I don't think I'm going to do a video to say, right, now I'm going to review it based on the full campaign, but I will probably mention it on another podcast. So at some point in the future, once I finish the campaign, which will take a while, I can only play it so often, I will basically sort of give my thoughts as to whether anything has changed since my initial review. So that'll be as much as I go with it, but yeah, just under 2,000 views, so not the most viewed video in the world. Oh, it was at 100% likes for ages, and then one person had to dislike it. Who are you, one person? Eh? Who are you? I don't know. People sort of mention, don't worry too much about the dislikes. I truthfully don't worry too much. I mean, most of my videos are in the 90s, the high 90s for likes, which is great. It means more people like the video than don't, but it does confuse me when you get these one or two people. I mean, you know, we've got six people dislike the Rate My Shelf Keyboard Cull video. Why? Because I said I was thinking of culling one of the games that's your love child? I don't know. It's like, why would you dislike a Keeple Cull video? What's there to dislike? Yeah, and then these other ones are usually just 1, 2, or 3 people, and 10. 10 people dislike the Gateway games. Why? Because you thought I was talking about kids' games when I said less than 5 years old? Learn to read? I don't know. What can I say about that? It's, yeah, there are some bizarre reasons why, and most of the time it is just a couple of trolls. You know, when it's only one or two, it's usually just the troll who waits for my videos on, like, every time I put one up, instantly comes in with a dislike. You know, there's one or two people out there that are just, like, that petty. But, like I say, I don't really get too worked up over them. It's just something that I find amusing to kind of look at when I do videos, you know, to see which ones get more than others. And typically the ones that get the most dislikes tend to be occasionally top 10 lists, but they also tend to be like the more controversial reviews. So Wormspan, for example, you know, where obviously if you don't give Wormspan a 10 out of 10, you deserve to be chased off the internet. Ones that you give a negative rating to, I wasn't a big fan of Mythwind, so that got 11 dislikes. What other ones have I given a relatively negative rating to? Last Light, 9. Yeah, 9 people dislike giving that one a bad rating. I wonder if that was the entire Dice Tower crew. And Septimer, only 6 people dislike that one. 200 people like that one. Only 6 people dislike that one, despite the fact that's probably the lowest rating I've given a game since Ticket to Ride Legacy. So that is saying something. But yeah, you know, as I say, I don't get worked up over it. It's just, I find it amusing, you know, that some people are out there. I mean, I personally never really dislike a video. I only dislike a video if it's one that I feel should be taken off YouTube. So we're talking ones that, you know, have very controversial topics or, you know, are lying about their subject matter. You know, like you got those clickbait ones out there for trailers, concept trailers, and stuff like that. I usually dislike them because they're lying to the public. You know, they're deliberately talking about really dodgy, controversial subjects, and you know, those are the sort of things you should be disliking, not just whether somebody had a different opinion to you. But now, well, I digress. But yeah, not a huge amount of videos there, but there is more to come. So I will try and do another top 10 soon. In fact, I am at the moment trying to get my Patreons to vote on some new top 10 ideas. In fact, I'm not going to show the page. I'm just going to have a quick, while I talk about one other thing, I'm just going to have a quick look and see what's being voted on at the moment. But essentially, if you join my Patreon, which is, you know, a way that this channel keeps going with being able to acquire review copies and more equipment, you know, when publishers won't send me them themselves, I have to rely on the Patreons to help me out. And they do a fantastic job. So that's something I can't, you know, cannot thank them enough for. But if you're at a certain level, you get to vote on upcoming top 10s. So at the moment, we'll see. Some ideas we've got going are top 10 games for free players, top 10 trick takers, top 10 irritating game design decisions, and by like like things that I don't like from game designers. Top 10 games based on video games, top 10 euros of pasted themes, sandbox games, and they're welcome to suggest their other ideas. Currently, we have a very balanced view of all of them. In fact, the only one that isn't getting any votes at all is top 10 euros with pasted themes, which is interesting. I would have thought that one would have got more votes, but at the moment, the one that is winning and likely to be the next video will be the top 10 irritating game design decisions. So essentially, top 10 things I wish designers would stop doing. That's not going to highlight specific designers. It's just going to be when I play a lot of games, I'm like, oh, why did they do this? You know, why would you design it this way? And those sort of things. But the rest of them are all on equal votes, 20%, 20%, 20% for sandbox, trick-taking, and free players, with video game ports just coming a little bit behind. So it is kind of a weird on that. The video games one, I might still like to do that one, but maybe I'll do that as a live one. Maybe I might try that as a collaboration with somebody who wants to talk about video game ports. That might be quite a good one. But otherwise, it looks like irritating game design decisions is certainly looking like the popular Patreon choice, so I suspect I should get started on sorting that one out. But, anyway, as I say, thank you, Patreons, for voting and showing your support. And other reviews to come in the future include Fractured Sky and Moonrakers, both from Ivy Studios. So I have been sent all of that content as review copies. And the intention is that I will... Ooh, hang on, I don't think this is sharing as much as I would like. Let's stop sharing there for a second. Share screen. Oh yeah, you got to share the window, not the tab, moron. That's why it wasn't working. Okay, so there we go. That's better. All right, so yeah, Fractured Sky and Moonrakers have been sent to me as review copies, and this includes all the Moonraker expansions, so Nomad, Overload, and Binding Ties, that's the other one. So I am playing them all at the moment. I've already played them enough solo, and suffice to say, you're buying these games for multiplayer, really. I mean, the solo modes in each one work, but that's literally as good as I can say about the solo modes. You know, this is one of those occasions where just because you could doesn't mean that you should. I mean, the Moonraker solo is pretty bad. I'm not talking about the digital version that they've done, Luminor's. I would like to try that, though. I'm just talking about the one-player mode that's in this game. It is beat your own score against a random deck of cards. That's all it is. It's not that fun. You know, and Moonrakers is all about negotiating with other players to do co-op contracts. Why would I want to play such a thing solo? And, you know, Fractured Skies has a similar problem where Fractured Sky really does sort of base itself a lot on the multiplayer aspect, but, you know, where you're kind of semi-bluffing where you're going, you've got hidden information that you're trying to find out. But then if you take that away, all you're doing is playing against an AI with, you know, random turns and almost like a probability exercise and guessing what, like, power they might have on certain places that you're trying to conquer for area control. And I don't know, it's just not as fun. It works, and Fractured Sky is probably the better of the two in terms of a solo mode, but I just don't see why I would buy this game purely for solo. Pretty sure Mark Dainty is going to disagree with me on this, but, you know, I think he's got a review coming out for this game very soon, actually. He's played this, like, over 10 times solo. Where he gets the time, I've no idea. But the, you know, the cool thing is that he has played this a lot, and no doubt I'm sure he'll be putting out a solo video. So, you know, I'll digress to his words on that one. But for me, I just wasn't really getting the point of these two solo. Now, multiplayer-wise, it's a bit of a different story, but I'll talk about that more when I actually get around to doing the video. So there will be a video review for Fractured Sky, there will be a video review for Moonrakers, and there will be a Beyond the Base game video for the Moonraker expansions. So you're getting three videos devoted to Ivy Studios at the moment, so hopefully you'll look forward to that content. That's a bit of ginger tea. Alrighty. Okay, well, before, you know, the main part of this podcast is mainly, I think, just going to be talking about a topic of the day. But the first thing I did want to mention is that I said that I would look at Kickstarter projects if I was interested in them. Like, I'm not doing full content on Kickstarters. I'll cherry pick the previews I like to do. You know, I'm very much more reviewer rather than previewer. So I've not been paying a lot of attention to crowdfunding at all. I mean, projects have just come and gone, and I haven't even been aware they are a thing. I'm trying to save my money. I'm trying to, you know, spend it on proper review copies rather than, like, Kickstarter stuff. However, One caught my attention only a couple of days ago, which apparently has been announced since end of March. I totally missed this. I missed this on Patreon. I missed this on Paul Grogan's Slack channel. I've missed this entirely. And as soon as I saw an ad for this on Twitter from Glass Cannon Unplugged, I was like, hello? It's like, how did I miss this? Well, what I'm talking about in question, if I can bring up the thing again, is here we go. And there we go. Don't Starve, the board game. So for those of you not aware of what Don't Starve is, it's on Steam. It's a cool computer game by Clay Publishing, I think they're called. Clyde Publishing. It's K-L-E-I. And they do various little games, like survival-based games and a few sort of build-your-own-little moon-based style things. I think, what is that moon-based one? It's not No Batteries Included. It's something, No Something Included. No Oxygen Included, I think that's what it's called. Yeah, they've done a few very popular games. I really enjoy Don't Starve Together. Don't Starve Together is basically the multiplayer version of this game where you have to survive in this, like, gribbly world with monsters and spiders and stuff like that. And you build a base, you cook recipes, you try and, you know, keep your food and drink up, you plant crops. You know, you're basically trying to survive in this wilderness. And I've played this with a group of friends of mine as a multiplayer, and I really enjoy it as a multiplayer. I don't like playing it solo. Playing normal Don't Starve, not interested. But the Together version, really enjoy. This, as a board game, I think is a perfect opportunity. And not only because it's a very good, like, a survival game is perfect for board game forms, because you can turn it into a co-op experience, which this is. This will be a solo slash co-op game. But also because the theme can be really strong. If you pay faith to the IP, it can work quite well. But the main reason is because you can see it on the page there, Glass Cannon Unplugged. If you don't know who they are, you might want to look at certain games like Frostpunk. Oh yes, you know, they have been associated with some, you know, the designers and the people behind Glass Cannon Unplugged have been known to have associated themselves with things like This War of Mine and some of, like, the old school Awakened Realms stuff. You know, so when it comes to theme, these people know what they're doing, and, you know, they did Frostpunk, which is one of my favorite solo games. You know, it is a fantastic, well done, great narrative, very strong theme. You know, it's a brilliant solo game, even if it is a massive, big, grandiose thing that's hard to get to the table. But they are, this one is coming from, here we go, so, yeah, a board game adaptation, the same team behind Frostpunk the board game. So they're doing Dying Light and Apex Legends. Not played either. I've got no real interest in Apex Legends and Dying Light. I'm not desperate for. I've never played the PC games. I heard they were kind of meh, so I wasn't too fussed. But where we go. So game mechanics will highlight player choice, dynamic combat, and open world exploration and day and night conditions. Sounds good to me. I certainly want to come across some of these gribblies, so I want to come across these, like, weird sort of barky dogs. The something hounds. I forget what they were called, but, you know, these yappy dogs. The spiders, which normally you're thinking, Luke, it's spiders, don't they scare the crap out of you? Well, I'm gonna admit, the spiders in this game, they half scare me, but they half make me laugh, because they do look a little bit creepy with the sort of big goggly eyes and the way they crawl, and you hear the scuttering, that, you know, that does slightly freak me out. And the spider queen is somewhat big and nasty, but the thing that makes me laugh with them is the fact that they do have that kind of gormless expression, and they make this sort of, they almost sound a bit like Donald Duck when they get, like, you know, knocked on the head by people. It's like, it's just like, it's kind of like you add that comedy effect. It's why films like Eight-Legged Freaks I was able to survive with. You know, yeah, the spiders and they're horrible. I don't like them. But because that film is A, horrible, B, that's pretty much it. Yeah, the film is so bad. It's almost so bad it's funny. Like, there's such stupid decisions, and the way the noises that some of them make when they get, like, killed or dooted off just sort of make them sound really weird and comedic. So it kind of gets you off. You know, humor is a good way to get through fear. I mean, Harry Potter's taught us that enough. But this one should be pretty sweet. I mean, here we go. 1 to 4 players, unrelenting, randomly generated nightmare world of the constant. A distant and ominous realm where magic and science intertwine in ways better left unspoken. Players must work together to outsmart their enemies and stay alive. So it's got the designer of Frostpunk and the one who was also, like, did some of the narrative direction. But also it mentions was it Jakub? I'm not even going to try and pronounce that name. Jakub Wisniewski. I don't know, but I'm butchering these names. But is most well known for his narrative work on Frostpunk, the board game, as well as This War of Mine. Both of them have fantastic thematic narrative, you know, narrative-driven mechanics in those two games. So if they can pull off the same kind of expertise with Don't Starve, this is definitely a Kickstarter I'm going to be paying attention to. Will I back it? Hard to say, because I'm always a bit finicky about you know, backing games these days. But you can bet that I'm going to be paying a bit more attention to this one when it gets released. You know, can they pull it off? We'll see. I just hope that if they are going to do a Kickstarter for this, they don't make it stupidly expensive. Because what worries me with this one is ripe for people just to go nuts with Kickstarter. Because you got, obviously, the board itself. You're going to have components now, but you're going to have miniatures, I bet. They'll do miniatures for all the different monsters and all the characters. And no doubt they're going to cost money. And you'll be able to get them in Sundrop, maybe. Or maybe they'll be like, oh, you can have a little meeples, or you can have big miniatures for another £100. I don't know. I hope they don't try to price everybody out of the market with this one, because I think this one could work very well as a board game. Just don't make it stupidly expensive. That's all I'm saying. Okay, more ginger tea. Right, well, I suppose while we're on the subject of Glass Cannon Unplugged and games like Don't Starve, where it's all gribbly monsters and stuff, because Don't Starve is not, I wouldn't necessarily call it an adult game. It's certainly maybe not necessarily for kids, because it does have some like weird wibbly monsters. It does have spiders and stuff. But there is almost a cartoony theme to it, with like the fact that it's animation, like hand-drawn animation. Which, by the way, if you've never heard of Don't Starve, go watch on YouTube. They do like promos, like little animated promos for the various characters in the game. Go watch a few of them on YouTube. They're fantastic. I would watch a movie of Don't Starve with that type of animation. It really does work very nicely. Particularly watch the one with I think it's the cook. I forget his name. He's the chef. Watch that video. It's almost kind of heartbreaking when you think about the deeper connection to that that video. It's like, oh yeah, you know, it can go into some dark dark themes. But the thing that I'm sort of getting onto here is whether the industry is going to go down a route where we think there's going to be more adult themed games, and is there a place for them? Now, what exactly does adult theme mean? Well, you've got like obviously the rating. So something that would be rated 18 plus, although to rate anything 18 plus in a board game is pretty difficult. I mean, you know, This War of Mine, I mentioned This War of Mine. I'm pretty sure This War of Mine does not have a, like, an 18 rated, like, warning, you should be careful playing this game. But if you know what This War of Mine is in terms of its theme and everything, it's not exactly one that you would read to kids as a bedtime story, is it? But there's nothing on the box that says 18 plus, or warning, this should not be played by kids with 18 plus. Typically, ratings only really appear as something on film, on TV. So film and TV classification always has something like an 18 rated sticker on it. I'm not aware of any board game that has come out with an 18 plus sticker, although, by all means, let me know in the comments if one such game has. But games can certainly take on some more adult themes. So This War of Mine, for example, is a fictional place that it talks about, but it's talking about surviving in a war-torn city. And this game does not pull any punches when it comes to the narrative storytelling of it. Because, wow, particularly with the campaign expansion, this goes into dark themes. I mean, your guys can get depressed, they can get hungry and ill, they can commit suicide because they just can't take it anymore. You can try and help people, at which point they suddenly get bombed to death, you know, or they starve to death. Or something. There's nasty stuff. And you even have to go out of your way to like survive and get resources. That might involve things like robbing the nearby hospital, at which point you become miserable as a result because you've just stolen from sick people. You can't exactly play this with la 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 sunshine and rainbows type attitude here, because it really doesn't happen. And the campaign expansion in particular, whoo-wee, that does delve into some dark stuff. So if you're going to slap an adult warning sticker on a game, this would probably be a good contender. But it's not that you see pictures of mutilated bodies or, you know, or sex imagery or anything like that. That doesn't happen with this game. It's described in the narrative. I mean, there's no sex scenes, but there's, you know, certainly grisly, you know, nasty stuff. But then again, I don't recall ever reading a paragraph in This War of Mine where it says the child lay there with legs that had been torn asunder from bomb blasts. You can see the flesh dripping off the bone as the child cries out to you, still alive. It's like, no, I mean, cool, blimey. Wow. Luke, you might need help. But, you know, you get what I'm saying. It doesn't go into grisly, gory detail. But this is war-torn, you know, a war-torn society, which is a little bit on the nose when you think of, well, recent events in our current history and, you know, what's still probably going on overseas at the moment. It's a little bit close to home for some people. And certainly I wouldn't expect to say, hey, kids, hey, there's War of Mine. Hey, hey. It's not going to work. It's not going to work at all. So, you know, but then I love this game. I love this game for the fact that it's nasty and gritty and mean. I mean, I've been going on about Tainted Grail, you know, in the recent review. And, you know, I love this game. It's got a really gritty, nasty Arthurian lore. Nothing about it is all sunshine and rainbows. It's all nasty stuff. Even some of the monster imagery is pretty nasty. And it does go into a little detail at times about some of the gory remains that does turn up. But again, Tainted Grail box does not sit here with an 18 plus sticker on it. There we go. So, yeah, this is the box. So, Kings of Ruin, Tainted Grail, Awakened Realms. Nope. No 18 sticker. No adult warning. You just kind of have to know going in that it's one of those types of games. But I love it for it. You know, these sort of games do appeal to me because I do like these ones that kind of make you feel a little bit, almost a little bit uncomfortable or, you know, take you slightly outside of your comfort zone. I mean, it's not that I don't like, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of horror films, to be honest. Although horror films, I don't mind if they are proper horror, like maybe psychological horror. You know, I still think like Alien is the best horror film ever made, but I don't like current horrors because A, they're usually garbage and the fact that there's no tension, no scares at all, and it's just dumb dialogue, you know. Much of the cheaper stuff. I mean, what was the recent one about like Ghost in a Swimming Pool or something like that? God, that was a god-awful movie. Yeah, so there's a lot of really bad ones. But then also other horror movies are just there to be gross. They're just there to be gory messes. Like, oh, how can we make people feel sick in this horror movie? Well, we'll have somebody cut in half while they're screaming with legs separate. I don't know. Oh, there was something called, oh, there was some clown who did that recently. And I forget what it's called, but, oh, like this really horrible clown that does grisly, gory stuff. And it's just like, I don't want to see that kind of stuff. I've already been scarred for life watching The Human Centipede, all right? You know, I do not need to be scarred anymore. And I'm not interested in that type of horror. So having it in a board game is just makes it a little bit more palatable. Now, we've had some games with these sort of adult horror themes for ages. I mean, you know, as people forgotten, Arkham Horror, you know, the classic Arkham Horror. This is Lovecraftian mythos. Everything about Arkham Horror is adult horror. You know, it's got gribbly monsters, it's got people, you know, with psychological mind screwage, you know, in terms of, you know, Euclidean geometry and all that stuff, you know, stuff to mess with your brain. But then it does have some pretty horrific stuff. It's got nasty monsters that look pretty scary. There's an entire realm called the Dreamlands that is full of horrific spider creatures. I mean, trust me, I have never sweated so much playing a board game as I did playing the Dreamlands expansion for Arkham Horror LCG. Oh god, that was scary. But you know, certainly I wouldn't put kids in front of this. I mean, would kids play Arkham Horror games fine? Kids like to be scared these days, and you know, this one I don't think goes into too much detail with gory details when it's in its narrative stuff. It's usually more of the horror setting. But yeah, it's not the first thing that I would go, ooh, kids, hey, play some Arkham Horror. Any of them, frankly. I mean, maybe some of the lighter stuff, like the tiny ones they do, but this Arkham Horror, Eldritch Horror, maybe Eldritch Horror, I don't know, but let's put it in the Arkham camp for now. The LCG, probably not. You know, a lot of these games I wouldn't necessarily want to put in front of kids, but then, as far as I know, as much as I talk about I wouldn't put these games in front of kids, I'm pretty sure there's going to be people out there who say, oh yeah, I play, you know, this War of Mine with my 9-year-old and my 10-year-old or whatever, constantly, and we love it. And it's like, good on you. You're desensitizing your children to that kind of thing nice and early. But, you know, I'm not going to have kids, so who am I to judge? It's just like, you know, some of these adult themes have existed for some time. And, you know, I love the Arkham Horror games, so I'm not exactly going to complain myself. What did I mention earlier? Frostpunk? Oh, yeah, I mean, let's stick to what I mentioned. Frostpunk, you're surviving in a winter wilderness. People are freezing to death. Kids are getting maimed in caves, you know, or in factories. You're putting kids to work, you know, which is already a pretty, you know, insane thing in itself. And you're having to take drastic measures in order to ensure people survive. There's death, there's misery, there's sickness. You know, it's all pretty adult stuff, but it's not gory. It's not, you know, horrific. It's just a very adult, unsettling, almost like depressing theme, which is not the sort of thing I would necessarily put in front of a kid, except maybe Watership Down. I feel like every kid needs to watch Watership Down at some point in their lives. Okay, yes, it has some traumatizing moments in it, and it's quite scary for kids, but I feel like that's a good way to get it. Let them be lulled into a false sense of security with, like, oh, it's about cute little bunnies, and the bunnies are little way. It just goes absolutely nuts. But, you know, there were some great films like that as a kid. We've all been traumatized by some stuff, you know, in our day-to-day lives. And I do like looking back on some old nostalgia movies to see what sort of stuff did that for me. But yeah, Frostpunk's another example, you know, grisly, nasty, adult-themed. It's definitely one there. Now, I've been talking mostly about horrific horror. So, you know, unsettling horror, like death, misery, something quite close to reality, you know, like wars and stuff. So flip it on the other side of the coin. I don't want to dwell on this too much because it's not really my topic area, but, you know, we don't really have any games, or at least as far as I'm aware, we don't have any main games that are sex orientated. So, you know, featuring lots of nudity or being about sex themes. Now, there is one game that I'm aware of that was to do with sex. Or, no, it was to do with dancers in a nightclub. I wonder what that was. Right, here it is, Night Shift. So I know very little about this game. In fact, I think I was even asked by email if I wanted to review it, and I declined to review it because, I mean, it's not that my channel appeals to kids, but I'm kind of like thinking that as much as I will talk and rant and occasionally mention the, like, once in a blue moon swear word or something like that on camera, I tend to swear more outside of a camera, but, you know, I do feel that the channel is partially, at least for the most part, family friendly. Like, younger people can watch my channel and not be traumatized or learn something bad. Reviewing something like Night Shift might be just drawing a line, though. I mean, this tagline alone: play as a stripper, charming worthwhile customers into emptying their wallets. Okay, this is, you know, I mean, the board game publisher is called Exotic Cancer as well. I mean, what exactly, who names their publisher and firm that? I don't know. But this is going to have models of, you know, scantily clad women, and the whole theme is about, you know, strippers. Can you get more adult theme than that? I don't think so. It's you're going to be pushing your luck on there. I mean, what, I don't know a huge amount of this game. So what have we got here? So thematic board game. So this is really going to play into that theme. Strip Club Dancer. Stories and gameplay are inspired by the creator's personal experience working as a stripper. Okay, providing an authentic and empowering take on this often misunderstood profession. Interesting if it's trying to tell something a bit true to reality, but, you know, we're talking about the adult theme here, nothing else. So, select from 5 different dancers who have a different approach to charming customers, earn the most money, use action points to navigate the club, discover new customers, each is unique, diverse range of potential outcomes, drinking's involved, VIP room, you know. So it doesn't look like it's going too crazy with the adult side of this. Like, it's not like, it's not, well, hopefully we're not going to have, like, criteria from customers and they're going to be wanting some weird warped stuff, you know, from a sexual nature. You know, I'm hoping it's mainly just, ah, oh, they like a chat, or they like lots of drink, and it's, this person needs a lot of drink, or this person has a lot of money, you know, that kind of thing. But still, this is a game about, you know, being a stripper and being nasty to your fellow strippers potentially. So, You know, you want to slap an adult sticker on a game. Is this really one that you would put in front of your kids? Would you make your 12-year-old play this? You know, or say, nah, son, this is not for you. Would your teenage daughter want to play a game like this? I'm not entirely sure. I'd be kind of worried if they did. But, you know, this is definitely... It's kind of weird. When we talk about... I mentioned the question earlier as to whether this kind of thing could exist in real life, like in the industry. Like, is there a market for adult-themed games? I certainly do think that from a horror standpoint, there is. Now, we're never going to have a 15, 18 plus sticker on a game. I mean, maybe a game called Sons of Anarchy might have had an 18 plus rated. I mean, that one talks about drugs and death and all that stuff. I've never watched any of the episodes, so I know very little about the show. But, yeah, that was a pretty, as far as I'm aware, grisly thematic game. But as far as I'm aware, that didn't have a content warning on it. So... horror, I think, is fine. Tainted Grail exists, and that's Ghibli horror. This War of Mine and Frostpunk, you know, I mean, Frostpunk's not that true to reality. We're not in a post-apocalyptic winter at the moment, but, you know, you are dealing with real people who have real lives and stuff. And, you know, This War of Mine, these people that you meet in the game have lives, they have things, you know, they're not real-life people, but you get what I'm saying. You're doing these things to other human beings in the setting that you're in. You're not doing it to a fantastical creature or something that is clearly make-believe. And this one, Night Shift, is obviously going to go down that route as well. But as much as I can see a market for horror, I'm not sure I'm seeing a market for this, like overly sexualized imagery and themes. I mean, let's face it, these days with the way that, you know, the modern sort of social media has gone, where everybody is offended by literally everything, and the word woke is literally a byword for controversy whenever it's mentioned on anything at the moment. I mean, hell, the new Fallout series, I watched that recently. I thought it was good, not great. It has some problems, particularly in the second half of the show, where I think it dips considerably since the first half. You know, you get people crying that out as woke, you know, because it's got a female lead and, like, you know, different diversities across the board. But honestly, I've watched the series. It does not mention any of that stuff at all in the entire series. I mean, there are some operators out there who literally shove it down your throat on a regular basis. You know, certainly Disney, I think, is guilty of that on the natural thing. But this Fallout series doesn't even mention it. It doesn't go into it in the slightest. There's nothing woke about the series, but, you know, that word gets cried out. And, you know, I think that if you start putting board games with sexualized sort of themes, I think that that's not going to cut it in a modern world. I just think there'd be too much controversy over themes that were used or how they were depicted. You know, it's going to alienate a lot of people from wanting to play the game, which means they're not going to sell well in the first place. I mean, you want to make it as a little passion project, fine, but, you know, I would be very surprised if this came out and sold well. It could be very good. It could be a solid game, but I can't see it appealing to a mass audience. Therefore, it's going to be a very niche game, I reckon, or at least one that's only played by a select group of adults, whereas a lot of people can happily play the Arkham Horrors or the, you know, the Tainted Grails or any other Ghibli horror game. You know, they can happily go into that. It's just, this might be going one step too far, but perhaps I'm wrong. Maybe from your perspective, you know, by all means, let me know in the comments, you know, do you think that I'm totally wrong about this type of theme? Do you think it's got a place and it will work? By all means, I'd love to discuss that. But yeah, I just think when we're talking about adult theme games, you know, we're kind of looking at two sides of the spectrum here. We're looking at grisly, gory horror, and we're looking at, you know, sexualized themes. The horror setting, I think, can work. The other one I don't think can, at least not in the current modern world. Maybe it's a bit too late for that. Perhaps a decade ago it might have been a bit easier, or maybe 2 decades ago it could have worked a bit easier. But I think we're in a society now where I don't think it's quite going to sit through. But that's just my opinion. It could be that a lot of people disagree on that front. But by all means, bring out all the other adult-themed games. You know, I'll take whatever horror game or gory game or, you know, grisly story-driven game you want to bring out, I'll certainly want to play it. I mean, some of my favorite games have these gritty themes. As much as I love a game about nature and animals, I still like my Tainted Grail and me Frostpunk and me This War of Mine, and, you know, I'm trying to think of any other grisly Have I got any other grisly horror games or grisly adult setting games that would certainly... I'm not really going to class something like Forbidden Stars. I mean, yeah, it's Warhammer 40k, but it's not something I would necessarily call the adult. I mean, let's face it, kids play tabletop wargaming all the time. That's more Arkham Horror stuff. Yeah, there's nothing in Mansions of Madness, but that's just Arkham Horror all over again. So, yeah, there's not a huge amount that I can think of that are extremely adult, you know, themed from that perspective. But you know what? I'm down for it. I reckon that they could. If there was a film classification thing now where you had to slap a 15 or an 18 on a board game, then by all means do so, because yeah, there'll be people that want to play it, and if people know in advance what type of game it is, then that's fine. They're not going to jump into it and go, oh god, I didn't realize Night Shift was... I thought Night Shift was about being a police security guard. I didn't realize it was about this. Ah! Although, to be honest, if you're looking at the cover of Night Shift and that's what you thought, then seriously, get your eyes tested. But you know, it's kind of clear from the cover alone is enough to tell you what the game's about. But, you know, there's things like that. So, yeah, I'd be interested to know your thoughts, everybody. You know, what do you think? Do you think that we've got a... You know, there's room to grow for adult-themed board games, you know, from a horror setting, from a gory setting, from a sexualized setting, you know. I'd be interested to know what you think. You know, this is going to be an interesting topic. I don't particularly think too controversial. I don't think it's that controversial. But, you know, in an industry where we don't have classifications for, you know, what age should be allowed to play a board game, you know, should we have something like that in place? I mean, it's... The problem is, seeing something on a screen, on a TV, in a horror setting is a lot worse than just having it on a weird image of art on a board game or something. Like, you're not going to get me to watch, you know, like one of the Hellraiser, like the original Hellraiser movie or something like that. But if there was a Hellraiser board game, I don't think it would be quite as bad as all that. So it dilutes it down by putting it in a board game form from how horrific it could be in... thing. I mean, any horror game that's meant to be jump scares. I mean, imagine if you made a Blair Witch board game. You know, the Blair Witch Project was stupid and horrible. I hated that movie. It was so boring and it wasn't scary. But the whole premise of it is jump scares. It's jump scares and, oh, what's that in the wood as I talk into my camera, snotting out of my nose. But, you know, you can't do that in a board game. You know, how would you replicate that same kind of horror in a board game setting? It wouldn't work. You could replicate the snot, that'd be fine. Just find somebody with bad personal hygiene or somebody with some very bad hay fever to play the game with you. But still, I'm not sure that would necessarily work for many, many reasons, actually. I don't even know why the comparison. So yeah, let me know your thoughts. I'm curious to know what you think. So that's it. There's not a huge amount to talk about in this episode, so I'm kind of cutting it short at just under 45 minutes. So by all means, take care, everybody. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Let me know your thoughts. Tune into more content when you can. I think April's just a bit of a quieter month, really. It's a quiet month in terms of game releases. It's a quiet month for me because, you know, there's my birthday that I deal with, and I think it's just a quieter month in general for people watching YouTube. I mean, I don't think a lot of people are watching YouTube in April because they're spending Easter with their families and doing stuff with their kids. So I think most people are kind of distracted this month. So I figured a shorter episode would work. Anyways, if you're at HandyCon next weekend, I will be there. HandyCon Milton Keynes, Friday to Sunday. I can't turn up until late Friday afternoon, though. I've got some flexi time from working overtime at the end of March for like doing tax work, but I still probably won't get to Milton Keynes until at least late afternoon, if not maybe just crossing into the evening period. So I'll be a bit late on the Friday, but Saturday and Sunday I'll be there, and I look forward to playing some games at HandyCon. Maybe I get another game of Hegemony in, or maybe one of the Surders, maybe Great Western Trail New Zealand, you know, whatever. You know, let's get some games in. It'll be cool, but it'll be good to see you there if you are. Take care, and remember, as always, it's only a game regardless of what theme you want to go with. You know, it's whether it's adult or kid friendly, just enjoy yourself. Take care. Bye for now.